You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Meltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
It is Full Contact Fighter Radio time once again. I'm your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. Gonna apologize, still feeling a little bit under the weather, so if my voice sounds a little out during today's show, that's why. And thankfully, I won't have to listen to Brendan making fun of the fact I'm sick, just like last episode. If you missed it, Brendan had a great deal of fun at my expense. My illness seemed to give him a lot of pleasure and caused for laughter. And I won't have to deal with that this time. Brendan's away on business, so for all his fans, you'll hear the highly regarded and revered Brendan Lehrer back next week. And I guess we can all look forward to that. But for today, we've got three guests coming on the show. Victor Valimaki is going to be joining us. Maximum Fighting Championship light heavyweight champ. He defended his title last week against Jared Kilkenny at MFC Gridiron. Victor will be coming on the show to discuss with us that fight, plus his hopes of returning to the UFC. And then we've got Jason Ireland coming on the program, the longtime King of the Cage lightweight veteran. We joined this on the program. It was announced this week by Pride that he'll be fighting none other than Joaquim Hansen at the upcoming February 24th Pride card in Vegas. So it'll be interesting to hear Jason's thoughts on that, on his upcoming Pride debut. And then finally, we've got the janitor, Vladimir Matyushenko, which a lot of longtime MMA fans will remember from his great days in the UFC, competing against the likes of Arlovski, Tito Ortiz, Pedro Hizo, Travis Youf. He'll be on the program. He's won a couple fights in a row now. And he's also signed on with the IFL. He had a recent win in the IFL. He's hoping to fight more often now, so we'll have Matyushenko on the program to discuss his plans with the IFL and his plans, his future plans for his MMA career, so that'll be interesting as well. So stay tuned, it's a packed show. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Don't miss the excitement of the International Fight League in its 2007 inaugural season.
Friday, February 23rd at 7:30 p.m. at the arena at Gwinnett Center.
When Carlos Newton's Dragons battle Matt Lindland's Wolfpack.
And Igor Zinoviev's Red Bears face off against Enzo Gracie's Pitbull.
Get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com or by calling Ticketmaster at 404-249-6400. The International Fight League, brought to you by Jim Stewart Ford, where everybody's a winner.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the Matrix, Mr. Victor Valimaki. He's coming off a title defense against Jared Kilkenny at last weekend's MFC. How are you doing today, Victor?
I'm doing good. My head hurts a lot less than it did earlier in the week.
Yeah, I can imagine there's probably a lot of media trying to get a hold of you, etc. Did you find, because of the Eskimos being on the card this last event, that there was more media exposure?
There was more media exposure, but a lot of it was actually directed towards them, which I find a little bit frustrating, because they do it more as a hobby than like full time, like a lot of the fighters on the card do. And you turn on Sportsnet and they're cycling it over 100 times about Maurer and Braidwood, and I think it's great. It definitely brings attention, but it, at the same time, most of the attention is towards them.
Yeah, well, and I should clarify when I, for American listeners, when I said two Eskimos on the card, we're talking about Edmonton Eskimos from the Canadian Football, Professional Football League. Mike Maurer, of course, the fullback, and Adam Braidwood, one of the linemen. They competed at the MFC. I kind of know what you mean, Victor, and I'll ask you a few questions about the fight itself, your fight, but, I was back in Edmonton covering the fights, and in some of the media, there was pretty favorable remarks about the MFC. But there's a couple comments, one in particular, and I won't name the journalist because I know he's widely respected in Edmonton. Maybe people know, read it. But, I mean, he referred to it as, he didn't care if it was legal or not. He still thought of it as barroom brawling. And I just think that if anyone has any knowledge about mixed martial arts at this point, then certainly a comment like that just is inappropriate, really.
Yeah, I saw an article. I know who you're talking about, and it is kind of, that kind of is a center shot a little bit, and I think that actually brings the sport backwards a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
With mainstream coverage kind of going and seeing that, definitely hurts. As opposed to being, having guys doing favorable articles.
Yeah, and it was funny too because I talked to a few different media people there, and there was one lady from a television network, and one of the fights ended quickly by a guillotine choke, and she didn't even know that she was actually quite abhorred by the fact that chokes were allowed in the sport. She was really put off by that, so it's nice to see some of the mainstream media coming and covering it, and it seems like some of the people who do it take the time to research and get some knowledge about the sport, and then unfortunately there's a lot of writers and reporters who just don't seem to be bothered to take the time to actually get to know what the sport's about and make comments like that.
Yeah, well, that's the nature of the beast with a growing sport. We do attract the new media now, but a lot of them are still very unfamiliar with the sport or just see it as like the original UFCs where, it was that's how they market it. It was a blood sport. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of trying to change that stigma a little bit and, just educate them.
Yeah, well, I know even in the journal, I think they referred to the Matt Dukowski-Nigel Zettergreen fight as a bloodbath. And from anyone who's followed the sport for some time, I mean, there was there was a slight cut, but I don't even think any of the doctors were even called in to look at either one of the guy's cuts, and it was far from what I thought of as a bloodbath. But anyways, let's talk to you about your big win over Jared Kilkenny. And first off, Victor, I think a lot of people were wondering before this fight if you were going to try to stand with him at the beginning. Jared is an up-and-coming fighter known for stand-up fights. Most of his wins, I think all of his wins, have come via strikes. And right away, you got the takedown. Was that just something that you saw and took the opportunity, or was that the game plan going in?
A little bit of both. I knew, I've seen him fight a few times. I've trained with a couple of guys from his camp, and I know, just looking at his record, all his wins are by, knockout or TKO. And I felt I actually could outstrike him if I wanted to, standing up, but there's no point playing into a guy's strengths. You might as well try to take him where he's weaker and try taking him down. And it turns out he was actually better on the ground than I thought he would be. Obviously I ended up knocking him out, so his stand-up couldn't have been too good.
Mm-hmm.
But, he's a lot taller than I am. And, he hits like a truck. Like he clips you a little bit and you feel like your head's caving in. So, there's no point standing there and trading bombs with them. But unfortunately, that's how it actually ended up happening. But that wasn't the game plan.
Yeah, well, and plus Jared started his career out at heavyweight, and then he moved down to light heavyweight to fight you. And so he had a reach on you, and it was quite a bit taller. And he rolled out of a nice armbar on your part on the ground. He reversed around, you took him down, and he rolled out of that armbar, and then he landed some hard shots. How hurt were you, Victor? There was some gas from the crowd, of course, fighting in front of your hometown fans. Did you feel like you were in considerable trouble, or were you weathering the storm all right?
I was weathering the storm. Like, none of the shots were that bad. Like, obviously they jar you a little bit, but none of them were on the chin. They were all higher up on the cheek, so none of them were... I wasn't worried about getting knocked out, but I was worried about them stopping it, because more than anything, I was just stuck in the position and couldn't get out while he was swinging away at me, and it looked bad, and luckily the rest, let it go a little bit, because I like to think I got a hard head, so I could take the punishment a little bit, but I was worried they were going to stop it, so, obviously I was trying to get back to my feet and just get the hell out of there.
Yeah, and when you guys got back to standing, it looked as if, do you think he just shot his load a little bit, so to speak? He had his hands down by his knees, and then eventually you guys started to exchange, and that's when you ended up dropping him and stopping the fight. Was that your sense? Did you think he was pretty tired? Did you think he really went all out for it as far as trying to stop you when you guys were on the ground?
I think he did, and that was actually half the game plan going into the fight. We knew that for 2 minutes he's one of the most dangerous guys around. For 2 minutes, like, he can... he'll steamroll somebody, and I knew that would happen, so I was prepared to, kind of weather the storm and come through it, and he actually tired quicker than I thought he would. I've seen him fight a few times, you know, and he always seems to gasp, but he still kind of pulls through and beats the guy. But this time, I think he definitely punched himself out, and I was fortunate enough to take advantage of it.
And we've had your manager, Mark Pavlich, on the program, and you alluded to it in your post-fight interview at the UFC, that if you were to defend your title, which you did, in impressive fashion, that the UFC might come calling again and have you back. Is there any confirmation on that yet, or are you guys still in negotiations?
I can't announce anything yet until things are signed, but I am going back.
Okay.
In the very near future, I'm going back, so I'm super excited about it. They actually didn't wait very long until after the fight. It was, you know, pretty much the day after they called and said they wanted me to come back. So this time I'm going to go back and make an impression.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about your UFC debut against David Heath. You lost a closely contested decision, and I got to see the fight on UFC On Demand. It wasn't shown on the pay-per-view or the under broadcast of it. But what are your thoughts looking back on it, Victor? Do you think you won that fight, or is there anything you would have done differently?
Oh, absolutely. I would have done a lot differently. This is one that kind of just slipped away from me, that I felt like I was almost an outside looking in. You know, I don't know what it was. It was one of those fights where things kind of get away from you and you don't really know why. You know, common sense would have been to take him down. I took him down very easily at the end of the second, very easily. It just seemed to fall there. I should have kept doing that for the rest of the fight. I was told by a lot of guys, Big John McCarthy, and a few other guys, that even one more takedown would have won me the fight. So I don't know why I didn't do it. I think I just got a little bit stubborn, and after he tagged me in the second round, I think I got a little bit stubborn and decided to try to stand up with him and hit him back, but probably not the best game plan ever.
Well, and what were your nerves like? I mean, you're making it to the UFC. That was your first fight. I believe that card was held at the Marine base, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, was that an intimidating experience at all? What were the nerves like for you?
Well, to be honest, I didn't really have a lot of time to think about the nerves. I wasn't exactly at my healthiest and, warming up for the to go out. I was still throwing up and, it was very hard to get into the fight. You know, it was probably the biggest fight of my life, and I was probably in the worst shape I've ever been in for going into a fight. It was not the best situation to be in. But the nerves itself didn't really play anything. I felt more pressure in other fights than I did for that fight.
So you had a virus going in, right?
I had food poisoning going in. So basically, right before I left to go down, I went out with the family, and turned out chicken from a restaurant sometimes is not always the best thing. So I ended up, I didn't even have to cut weight. Normally I cut about 20 pounds to make a weight class. I woke up the day of the fight at 205 without cutting any weight. That's how sick I was. I think I ate for a few days before the fight. I think I had a bagel. That's about it. So, But not to make excuses, I still felt okay in the fight. I just kind of sucked it up and still fought pretty good. So, but I think in a rematch, I'd definitely beat him.
Well, I wanted to ask you, it looked like he was saying some things to you during the fight. Was he actually saying things to you the fight, or is that just the way it kind of appeared?
No, he was trying to taunt me. He was trying to get in my head a little bit. But for the most part, I just tried to ignore it.
Yeah, have you ever fought someone who's done that before?
No, never. Yeah. No. I've had guys kind of, say something like, in a good way, you'll catch someone. I've had someone kind of like, hey, that was a good shot or something. But, he was really trying to, play the mental game and, try to taunt me. And, I'd leg kick him and I'd hit him on the knee a little bit and he'd just say, oh, I bet that hurt. Little things like that, but nothing you can, all you can do is ignore it and just keep going.
I've seen you fight a few times now live, and everyone always says that people who fight you say that you hit extremely hard, that you got really, really heavy hands. But on the flip side too, man, it's like I think you're getting a rep for having a pretty good chin. Like Vernon White, he got dazed a little bit, came back very quickly in that fight, went on to win that fight. David Heath had you wobbled. Here again against Kilkenny, I know you said that you weren't in too much trouble, but it looked like, from at least for our vantage point, you're taking some heavy shots. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's a fair reputation? You're getting known as for heavy hands as well as an iron chin?
I think so. I do have a hard head. At least I'm told that all the time. I have a hard head, but I don't think that's the best game plan is to just have a hard head and take shots all day. So you end up talking like Muhammad Ali. So, yeah. I guess I try not to get hit, but I don't think I've ever actually been knocked out.
Well, yeah, like the last time you were on the show was after your win over Jason Day, and then you fought Vernon White, I think, about 2 or 3 weeks right after that, and I was covering that event as well. And same thing, I mean, against Vernon White, it looked like he had you in trouble at one point, and then you came back and really shrug it off fairly quickly, took him down, and won the fight. Is that the fight you think that really put you over and got you in the UFC, Victor?
I think so. That was the first international fighter that I ever fought. No, that's a lie. I fought Dan Severn,
right.
But everyone knows Dan Severn's a little more over the hill now. So Vernon White was still, like, right before he fought me, he fought Lyoto Machida, right? So
yeah.
He's still very active fighting top-level fighters, so beating him was huge. And it was, I still didn't think I'd get a call for UFC yet. I thought I still need more experience, but as soon as I called, I was, obviously extremely excited about it. But yeah, absolutely, that would have been the fight that put me over, I think.
It's got to be pretty crazy. I mean, we've had it on the show before, and you've talked to us about why you left the sport for a while. You had family obligations, some injuries, etc. But honestly, man, I mean, you look at it, you started back in September 2005, and then by the end of 2006, you're in the UFC. Would you ever have thought that when you came back to the sport?
No, not at all. Like, that was obviously my goal, was to... was to do it full time and to, be successful at it. But I thought I'd have to chip away at it and just, keep fighting. And I thought it would be a few years before I ever made it to that. So for everything to come this quickly at me has been a little bit shocking, but it's been super exciting as well. And, no complaints.
Did you get a chance to see the Roger Hollett, Mike Maurer fight? Hollett is the guy that knocked out Mike Maurer, the Edmonton Eskimo fullback, for those people who are listening. Did you get a chance to see that fight, Victor?
Yeah, I did. I had a little bit of an obstructed view when I saw it originally, but I've seen the replays of it since, and it was a good knockout.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously you're hoping to have some success in the UFC, but you also are the MFC light heavyweight champion, and Roger Hollett afterwards, it sounds like he and Jason Day might fight. Sounds like there's a little bit of animosity there already. I don't know if that's his hyping it or not, but what are your thoughts on that first, Roger Hollett versus Jason Day?
That's a tough one to call. No comment. I like both the guys. They're both really tough. Jason Day definitely has the experience going into it. So that could play a huge factor. But that would be a great fight either way. Whoever wins, that's going to be a good fight. So about the Maurer knockout, you got to remember though as well. Like Roger Hollett is very good. He's a stud, but. Maurer, nothing against Maurer at all, but he's only had one fight.
Yeah.
So in the grand scheme of things, he's, he isn't inexperienced at all, so, and he only trains in the off season. So, for Hollett, who trains full time, it looks great, and it was a really good knockout, but really it wasn't anything, spectacular.
Well, and I was kind of shocked by the fact that, and maybe my memory's not the same as it was a year ago, but from what I remember seeing Mike Maurer's first fight, it seemed like, to me, like, not that this had any bearing on the knockout, but he certainly seemed more bigger physically. And Roger Hall, I mean, the guy just looked like a brick house compared to Maurer.
Yeah, Roger's a big boy for sure. Yeah, and Maurer, I was actually surprised when I saw him at the weigh-ins. He definitely didn't look like what he did last season at all, so I think your memory's fine.
Yeah. another thing I wanted to ask you about is one of your training partners, Jason McDonald's, got the fight of his life coming up against Rich Franklin. Brendan and I spoke to Jason quickly at the event. He's been training with Team Jackson. What are your thoughts, Victor, on what Jason has to do to beat Rich?
Well, that's a tough fight for anyone. Rich Franklin, I don't think he looked... I didn't think he looked himself against Anderson Silva at all. I still think Rich is one of the best guys in the world, so he's going to make... Any opponent is going to be a fight, so Jay's in for a tough fight. And Jay's, the only thing you can do when you're offered a fight like that is just train your butt off, and that's what Jay's doing. He was down in New Mexico with Greg Jackson's camp for a couple weeks, and he's back now training with us. So right now all the training is basically focused around him. So I'm just trying to help him get ready as much as possible. And I think he's going back to Greg Jackson's. I think on the 19th, right up until his fight, to just, finish off, train with Rashad and Diego Sanchez and those guys.
Yeah.
Gil Senor down there. So I mean, he looks great. I've been training with him all week, and he looks great. Like, I mean, he's going to make it a fight for sure.
And what about for you? I mean, Mark Pavlich manages both you guys, and I know he sent out Jason to train with Patrick Cote and Fabio Holanda before, now Team Jackson. And I know you don't want to go into specifics about when you're fighting next, but has there been any discussions along those lines, Victor, about you possibly going elsewhere to train as well?
Yeah, we've been talking about it. Just kind of, we're trying to decide on where to go. The thing is, everyone has the same problem of finding training partners, right? You have to go to one of these bigger camps. Especially in Canada, it's hard to get a lot of good fighters together. You know, I'm in Edmonton, Jay is in Red Deer, you know, there's a couple guys out east, a couple guys, you know, in Vancouver, but there's no one specific camp for anyone to train at. You know, we try to bring in wrestlers and boxers and things like that, but for some serious high-level guys, you pretty much have to go to a big camp like Greg Jackson's or, you know, Team Quest or somewhere like that. So we're probably thinking, you know, along the lines of Greg Jackson's. I can't really get into the date of the fight, but we're probably going to go, you know, down in the next little while.
Okay. My last question for you is another guy who trains with you, Ryan McGilvray. Interesting story. To be honest, I didn't even know about the fact that he had had the horrible back injury playing lacrosse several years ago, and that's a remarkable story. He's had some great success coming back from that injury. Tell us a little bit about him, Victor. You were, in front of me for his fight, and it was clear that you and Jason were very excited about his win. He pulled off another big win. What can fans expect from Ryan McGilvray? He's still young in his career, but is he the real deal? Can people look forward to some good things from him in the future?
Yeah, I definitely think he's got tons of potential. I mean, he's the nicest kid around, so we have to ride him a little bit. But I think he's actually getting sick of hearing about his back. You know, every time we talk to him, someone brings up the back.
Yeah,
so like,
yeah.
Your back. Yeah. You know, it's a good story, but, you know, the kid's got so much potential. He trains hard. Like, he comes down and trains with me and Jay. And I wish I had training like that. When I first started, it was just a bunch of guys training and, picking guys up, watching videos and stuff like that. You know, if I had guys, you know, like myself and Jason McDonald starting off, I mean, to help you train, that, you know, would have helped a lot. But I think the kid's going to go far. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see, obviously it's early in his career, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him in UFC in, you know, a couple of years. And, we just want to keep him active. That's the most important thing, is just keeping, you know, younger fighters active, not feed him to the wolves and, keep him winning.
Last question, actually, quickly before we let you go, is your brother, Danny Valimaki, he's had a couple fights. How are things going with him, and are we going to see him competing again soon?
I think so. He definitely wants to. It's just finding time for him. He's going to school full-time. He works, and training, you know, if you're going to train seriously, is a full-time job. So he's probably the busiest guy I know. His heart's into it, but he's so spread out right now with everything. The scary thing is he's one of these guys who – he'll train, you know, once a week and still, you know, I'll train with him and, you know, I have to be very, very careful not to get hurt against him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'll train once a week. So the scary thing is if he actually trained full time and dedicated himself, I think he'd beat a lot of guys, a lot of good level guys.
Yeah. Well, Victor, we appreciate you coming on the show. Congrats on the win, and hopefully everything comes to be as far as your next UFC appearance. Hopefully that gets confirmed soon. And best of luck in the next couple of months.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Victor Valimaki, thank you very much.
No problem.
The world's only mixed martial arts league, the International Fight League, brings you explosive fighting action with championship-caliber athletes in its world premiere season. Don't miss the excitement of the International Fight League in its 2007 inaugural season. Friday, February 23rd at the Arena at Gwinnett Center. Find out which team will reign supreme when Carlos Newton's Dragons battle Matt Lindland's Wolfpack. And Igor Zinoviev's Red Bears face off against Enzo Gracie's Pitbull. Get your tickets at the Gwinnett Center box office at Ticketmaster.com or by calling Ticketmaster at 404-249-6400. As the first mixed martial arts league of its kind, the IFL is primed to change the face of the sport forever. Be a part of it all. Friday, February 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at the Arena at Gwinnett Center. Get your tickets now at the Gwinnett Center box office, Ticketmaster.com, or call Ticketmaster at 404-249-6400. The International Fight League. Your sport starts subject to change.
The best offer MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
Hey everybody, this is Joe LTRJ Dirksen, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mullen.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the Irish Tornado, Mr. Jason Ireland, who, of course, has just been announced this week. He's going to be taking on Joachim Hansen at the upcoming Pride 33 show on February 24th. Mr. Ireland, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm on top of the world.
Yeah, it definitely leads into to my first question, and I think a lot of people probably would like to hear the answer to this. How did this come about, Jason? And I mean, it's gotta be pretty big, huge news for you, I'd imagine.
Over the last couple of years, I've always gotten calls that, you know, my name was on the short list or my name was in the running for a big fight here, a big fight there. And I got another one of those a couple weeks ago, that there was a possibility that there might be some opportunities for me in Pride. But it wasn't until last Friday that I got the call. Terry Treblecock from King of the Cage, who works alongside with the Pride matchmakers a lot, gave me a call last Friday night and told me it was a done deal.
Yeah, and you're going to be fighting Joachim Hansen, who I think a lot of people would rank is one of the better lightweight fighters in the world, top 10 probably. What are your thoughts on Joachim, Jason? There's a lot of tape out there on him. Have you been studying a lot of tape, or are you one of those fighters that doesn't really do that?
No, whenever I get a chance, I mean, I've been all over, and I've seen his fights before, but the last 6 days I've been on YouTube, almost as much as I've been in the gym. You know, I love to get tape on everyone and find out, exactly what their styles are and, you know, if they have any weaknesses. And like you said, top 10 fighter, I think on just about everyone's poll, he's anywhere from 4 to 7. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's definitely a test for me, but, I feel I'm ready for it. I feel I've been ready for it. And, I'm not going to be coming in there just to make an appearance and be happy with the fact that I'm fighting in Pride.
Yeah, and I mean, what do you think of Joachim as far, you know, he's coming off a loss to Shinya Aoki. I guess it was a Gogo Plata that tapped him out. Do you see holes in his game? Do you have a game plan?
Well, to be honest, I wouldn't say any holes in his game. I think his ground game and his submission grappling is probably one of his strong points, or strongest points. I believe he grappled in the Abu Dhabi trials, or actually in the tournament 1 year. I mean, anyone can get caught in a move, especially something that's kind of unorthodox like that.
Yeah.
I think probably his strengths are his ground game, the fact that when he hits to hurt you. He's got some tenacity. If anything, I think maybe his wrestling and, his technical striking might be, the weakest part of his game, but that's not bad either. You know, he's a very well-rounded fighter.
Now, for yourself, you've competed a lot in King of the Cage more recently, and then had some success in Victory Fighting Championships, etc. For some of those people who maybe haven't had a chance to see you fight, tell us a little bit about your MMA background and where you feel you're best at and who you train with.
Well, I've been training now for about 8 years, going on 9. A lot of my training's been done on my own, and I've just kind of moved around from school to school and picked up things here and there with a lot of the different professional fighters here in Michigan. Brendan Segan, we started training together. The MASH fight team was run by James Lee. Dave Gomez a few years ago was someone who helped me get ready and train a lot. I consider myself not to be great at one aspect of the game, but pretty damn good at all of them. I've submitted guys in grappling tournaments like George Gergel, who's a BJJ black belt. I've been in fights with Matt Danzing and banged with him for 3 rounds. I can stand up, I can wrestle, and I can submit people. Like I said, I'm not the greatest at any one of those three things in the world, but I'm here to compete with anyone in the lightweight class.
And as you mentioned, you've been training for quite some time, and you've been competing for several years. And when you look at your record, Jason, you went on that one tear there. There was about 8 or 9 wins in a row. And that concluded in the end of 2003, and you took all of 2004 off. Was that due to an injury, or did you just need a break from the sport?
I believe I was even getting up in some of the rankings at that time, and I was really felt that I was making a run at a couple big fights. Unfortunately, I was involved in a hit-and-run accident and actually completely run over by a landscaping truck and dislocated my hip. And had quite a few, severe bumps and bruises, that type of things. But it was probably 6 months or so before I was really even up on my feet, moving around without the help of a cane. So it was a long recovery to get back into the shape of actually being able to compete. I did that at my first fight. Comeback fight was against George Gill in King of the Cage. We had a pretty memorable fight for a lot of the fans. For myself, it was just proving that I could actually get back there and do it. Like I said, it was a long road to recovery, but that's why I took 2004 off, and that was the only reason.
So, I mean, that's got to be for anyone who experienced something horrific like that, it's got to be awful. But for yourself, Jason, as you mentioned, you're having tremendous success. What did that take? I mean, that must have been a huge mental test for you in the sense of being able to come back and have the conviction to try to recover from your injuries. And then, now you look at, you've got an opportunity of a lifetime coming up this month.
Well, I think it's just a lot of support. Friends, family, fans, a lot of my fan base is friends of mine, some of my higher profile fights, like the George Gurgel fight, got me a lot of fans because they saw that I went out with heart and, pushed the fight, didn't run around the ring for 3 rounds and really tried to give the fans something that they wanted to see. That, doing it for the pride, but the support of my training partners. I've had a couple guys that have been with me since day one that continuously push me. They believe in me, even when others haven't. My family, I recently just had a baby girl. I have a 4, 7, and now a 3-week-old, 4-week-old.
Oh, wow.
I got a tremendous support there. It's tough when you're training 6 hours a day and working a full-time job 8 hours. It's tough on your wife when she's taking care of 2 kids and a newborn.
Yeah, I bet.
So her support is definitely going to, help me from here on out. But to get back and to compete again, I just had to get in there and prove to myself that I could do it and I could compete at a high level. I think since that point, I think my last 6 opponents, I think 4 of them are either fighting in Pride or the UFC. I'm 3-3 in my last 6 fights, which some people might look at and say, why does this guy get a shot? I fought some of the best opponents. I'm not padding my record with nobody's. And I'm going out there and going after it. And that's what a lot of the fans want to see.
When you look at your record, you've won the 3 of your last 4 fights. The only loss to Mac, which is a decision, 3-round decision. Do you feel that you're finally at that point, once you started putting some wins together, that you finally fully recovered from your injuries and you're ready to go back to the old 100% Jason Ireland?
Yeah, there's certain things in my hip that I know will never be the same, but there's no pain anymore. I've got a strength coach over the last year and a half now. That I'm working with, who's just amazing. He goes, way outside the box when it comes to just weightlifting and conditioning. I'm taking care of myself better. As you age a little bit, you start listening to your body, and when little things hurt, you get into the doctor, you get into the chiropractor, you get yourself fixed up, so you can compete at the level that you need to, especially when you start fighting people like this. When you're younger, a bruise is nothing, a little pain is nothing, you can work through it, but start getting a little bit smarter instead of training harder, and it works out a lot better for you. But I'm 100% ready to go. This is the first fight in a while, actually, I'm going into without any you know, nagging injuries, and I'm excited. I'm really excited.
And it's got to be good timing for you because you just had a fight 10 days ago. You stopped Jimmy Boyd, a King of the Cage Mass Destruction. So I'm guessing then you're probably coming in at peak shape. I mean, you had to have been in shape for that fight. Now you get to transition less than a month later into this fight.
Yeah, that was nice having it. I mean, I know it is a short notice. I have the fight on 3 weeks, so it did help a lot that I was already in a camp getting ready for my last fight. Would I have liked to have 6 or 8 weeks to know that I'm going to be fighting Hansen and it's going to be on this date? Of course. But, you know, when Pride calls you and tells you that they want you to fight, you don't make any demands. You just say yes, and where do I need to be?
You don't have a private helicopter picking you up, Jason, with a nice rider?
Not yet, but sooner or later here, you know, I'm planning, after I put together a couple wins here, on getting something to where Pride will let me wear my green gloves. It's kind of been a trademark for me for the last couple of years, and I don't know how those blue ones are going to look.
Well, you talked about your day job. Maybe for the fans listening out there, what kind of work do you do? And the second part to that question is, a few years ago, it seemed like 90% of the fighters, 95% of the fighters are in the same situation that you're in. And now you're starting to see a few more guys able to give up their day job and concentrate on fighting full time. Is that what you kind of envision, or is fighting for you just something that you kind of like to do as a hobby and on the side?
It definitely started as a passion and as a hobby. Over the course of the last couple of years, it's turned into something that, you know, I want to make some money. This needs to be a profession for me. So, you know, I'm a health club manager at an upscale athletic club. And it's funny that a lot of people, they find out I'm a fighter and they go, wait, you're the nice guy that signed us up here at the gym. It's a very family oriented place. Well, that's a little different. With the sponsorships and things that are available out there and the way that the sport's getting mainstream, a lot of fighters can make a very decent living fighting, but it's going to be that upper echelon of fighters. You know, top 10 fighters are going to be able to really live a, nice lifestyle and fight. I mean, if you're young, just coming out of school and don't have a problem living on a, $20,000 a year salary, yeah, you can go around the country and fight in the small shows until you get up there into the bigger ranks, but it's still only going to be those top 10 fighters in each weight class that are really going to be able to make a decent living for their family. So, I'm looking to, be able to put away maybe some retirement funds from fighting and things like that, but I never see it actually being something that I'm never going to be able to work or quit my day job. Lightweight fighters don't make as much as heavyweights to begin with.
Yeah, well, hopefully that changes. You had the fight against Mac Danzig. It's kind of interesting, isn't it, that you've got two King of the Cage, two of the more notable lightweight fighters that have competed for King of the Cage. And finally, here's your guy's big chance. We've had Mac on the show a couple times as well, and he had always he would go on about how he wanted to make it to Pride, and now here you guys are. What's that like for you to see Mac also going to be fighting on the same card? He's going to be taking on another tough guy, Hayato Sakurai.
Hey, I mean, I couldn't wish it for a nicer guy in the world. Mac, me and him hung out after our fight, got along great. He's a good guy. He's definitely worked hard for it. He went on a long win streak. I think it has a lot to say about, King of the Cage and some of the fighters that they do put out there. I mean, you look at the UFC and Pride and how many of those fighters got their start or at least got their name out there in King of the Cage. It's quite a few. Mm-hmm. Being on the card with him, it'll be real nice. He's got a heck of an opponent as well who's also, top five in the world in the lightweight class. So, Mac's very well rounded. He trains harder probably than anyone I know. And he's definitely going to be ready for it. It looks like a lot of the theme of the card is almost, Japan versus USA with the exception of a few of the fights. So, it looks like we'll have a little camaraderie in our corner and stuff like that. And I'll be rooting for him when he's out there.
And having fought Mac, what do you think he needs to do against someone like Sakurai? How can Mac win that fight?
Explode first. When I fought Mac, I lost a close decision, and he really came out and stole the third round and really stole the fight from me. But I got off to a quick start and was very offensive on him. right away. And it looked like that put him back on his heels a little bit. If he comes out and goes full bore, you know, for 3 5-minute rounds, there's no reason why he can't beat him, why he can't be in the top five in the world.
Yeah. And anytime we have a veteran fighter on like yourself who's been around for a while, I always like to hear their perspective on the growth of the sport, how much MMA has exploded, and you know, you took that 1 year off due to the injury, due to the hit and run, and that was back in 2004. Did you ever think back then, Jason, that we'd be at the point where we are now with Pride doing shows on American soil, the UFC regularly on TV, you've got Elite XC's debut this weekend being shown on Showtime. Did you think back then that the sport would get to the point where it is, Jason?
Not this fast. I mean, I guess I always hoped, and, you know, as many people who not only compete but love the sport, they always hoped that it would get mainstream and people would stop calling it human cockfighting and would understand it a little bit more before they judged it. But I would have never imagined, if you'd asked me, you know, 3 years ago, where do you think this sport's going to be in 2007? It's amazing. You know, a lot of it has to do with a lot of the marketing and things. You know, Pride and the UFC have both worked very hard on getting on TV. You know, the FSN shows, Spike TV, obviously. I think the reality show, you know, definitely got the sport out there in front of the public and made a lot of stars. You know, to come with that, we also, though, you get the good with the bad. You know, you get a lot of people on the message boards and things like that, and all of a sudden you see these people who think they know everything about mixed martial arts and, you know, are claiming that they're veteran fans of the sport because they've been following it since Tough One. You know, that's a little humorous for us that started watching it when the only, you know, show we had was, you know, Jeff Osborne shows down in Indiana and stuff like that, that you can find on DVD here and there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. I guess probably remember the rest of my life that, you know, I was part of something when it took off from the beginning, you know. There's really not much more you can say about it. This sport has arrived. You know, it's all over a lot of the major news stations, CBS, NBC. You know, you see specials on it now all the time. I think tomorrow night or Sunday or something, they got something on NBC. CBS just added a mixed martial arts page to their sports program. It's pretty special.
Yeah, no, it's pretty remarkable. My last question for you, Jason, with a last name like Ireland, I mean, you got to think a couple big wins here in Pride and maybe talk about sponsorships. You know, there's a lot of possibilities, buddy. Guinness, Frosted Lucky Charms.
it's out there. I mean, the marketing is the biggest thing, and not only do you have to be able to perform, you got to perform for the fans. They got to be able to go, I remember that guy. Oh, remember that guy with the green gloves? You know, he fought a hell of a fight. You know, it's just, it's a business. You got to go out there and fight. And probably one of the weakest parts of my game is that business. I don't like running around and telling everyone how I'm going to beat everyone up and I'm the best. And, you know, I'd rather do my talking in the ring. But, you know, over the last couple of years, I've realized you really got to coin something and make it your own. You know, and sooner or later, those big type sponsors that you see in NASCAR and you see in all the other major sports, sooner or later, they're going to catch on too. So, like, you know, people like Guinness and things like that, they start looking around the corner, you know, I'd be happy to sign a deal with them.
Well, you know, Guinness is one of the lower calorie, more nutritious beers out there, so that's a plus too.
It's all, you know, organic.
Yeah. That's another plus too. High in iron. Well, now we're getting carried away. Sounds like we are sponsored by Guinness. Well, Jason, we appreciate you coming on the program, and wish you best of luck on the 24th. Jason Ireland, of course, fighting Joaquin Hansen, February 24th in Las Vegas on Pride 33. Mr. Ireland, thanks a lot, and take care.
Thank you very much. You have a good one.
Okay.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining the program now is the janitor, Vladimir Matyushenko. And I got to tell you, Vladimir, first off, this is the first time I've talked to you. One of the better nicknames in all of mixed martial arts, Vladimir, the janitor. It's great. Tell us a little bit about why, how you chose that name for your nickname.
Nickname. First of all, some people don't think that's the greatest name, and some people think it is. I don't know. Its popularity goes up and down, but seems like right now it's pretty cool. I didn't really knew after, I didn't know who made it first, and then I find out, and it was a long time ago back in the international tournament when I was wrestle for, back for Soviet team and then for Belarusian national team, and a U.S. team came out, and I think it was in the Krasnoyarsk, international tournament, and then before weighings, day before, we were working out, and I was trying to make weight, so my clothes was kind of like, nothing top notch, and I was trying to clean the mats then, and the U.S. coach is a tatami janitor, and there was a two guys there in the team. And they included Kevin Jackson. He won a Golden Olympics that year. And then next day I came out and, beat both of the guys. So coaches make fun of them. They say, well, you lost to the janitor, you know.
Yeah, I always wanted to know. I think a lot of people maybe don't know the story behind that name.
They were pretty much were making fun of their own guys. Yeah. Telling them they lost to the janitor.
See, I always thought it was just, it was like janitor, as if, you clean the mats with your opponent kind of thing, that sort of.
Yeah, well, then it pick it up, and then, I don't know, people just start calling me that.
Well, Vladimir, recently you had your IFL debut, and it was a successful one, and maybe for people who didn't get a chance to see the fight yet, you took out Dwayne Compton in the first round with strikes. Maybe just quickly, can you give us a quick rundown of that fight?
Yeah, my original plan was get him quick on my strikes, and then again he was a little bit scared. He kicked me once, and then he just died for the takedown. And at the same time, I missed my jab, and he went back kind of on. But I feel pretty confident because he didn't took the back, so he doesn't have probably enough experience. If the guy get in the back, he should just, wrap the legs around, and he didn't, so I'm like, oh, whatever, I just did regular, wrestling, what's it called in wrestling, it's a grandi roll, just a grandi roll, and then from there, I just get side control, and then it's a submission wrestling 101, just side control, mouth, hit him a couple of times, he sticked his hands out, and I went to the arm bar.
Yeah, right, my arm bar, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't finish him right away, and I was like, well, what was wrong? I was kind of a little bit too far from him, and his hand was extended, and, but then I adjusted and finished him pretty quick.
And how did that come about, Vladimir, as far as you joining the IFL, a member of the Sabres now? Tell us a little bit about that. What brought you to the decision to join the IFL?
Well, like in my previous interviews, I said that I didn't took the offer right away. I was kind of thinking, I was kind of skeptical, especially like, not right now, but before, a few months ago, was a lot of organization, and a lot of people were, new organization come out, and As a matter of fact, I lost my fight before that one in the summertime. A lot of people didn't get paid, and they keep saying it's good, it's great, and then so I kind of was thinking for a while, and then I kind of review all information about IFL, and I took it. I like it. I like the idea, the team idea, and the salary, the monthly thing, and monthly salaries, and a lot of people to train, and also relax people mentally before fights. If you all the team idea, it's also good because you don't feel that pressure on you on just individual fights. So it's good to show your skills and that. And then I took the offer, and I like my team so far. They're good for each other, with a good combination of guys who have experience, like Antonio McKee and John Marsh and myself, and other guys, the young guys who have a drive and good in condition. And so I'm looking at those young guys if they were going for runs, or and I have to try to keep up with them, so it's good for me.
Now, the last few years, you've pretty much been fighting about once a year. So can fans now kind of look forward to you competing more often? With the IFL schedule, you'd probably have to fight at least three times a year. Is that your plan, Vladimir?
Yes, that's definitely another thing when I took this offer. And because my fights are scheduled, it doesn't matter if we have alternates, if somebody can make weight or somebody get hurt. So it doesn't matter what, you have a lot of chances to get fight. And then I think that was one of my biggest disadvantages before. I didn't took enough fights, and I have some, most of my fights were good fights I won, but some of my lost, and it's trying to make adjustments if you fight once a year.
Mm-hmm.
You have been more often than, I think, three, four, five fights, six a year is good. Then if you make mistakes, and you can adjust next fight, and you can see what's wrong, and adjust next one, so you can see your improvements or your mistakes. If you just fight once a year, it's hard to do it.
Now, you mentioned you've put together a few wins in a row now, and since you left the UFC, which is, I think, back in 2004, or 2003 maybe even, there was about a year there where you didn't fight, Vladimir, after your loss to Andrei Arlovsky. Was that just because there wasn't the right kind of fight offered to you, or you just needed some time away from the sport? What was behind that break?
Well, it was a little bit of both. I didn't know where I'm going to go at the time. And then, first of all, I broke my hand. I didn't know it was broken. I broke my big thumb when I hit him with the hook. And then a week later, I went to the doctor, and they said it's broken. They have to put the pins in there. So it took me a few months to recover from that. And then from there, I'm like, I don't know, there's no offers, and fight for UFC again for just a few $1,000s and train. It's just hard if you understand that you have to spend a few months to train so you can put everything on side. You can just, train and work somewhere else. And then if you fight and you get hurt or something happens, you fight, you don't, and then make enough money, then you screw you. Everybody has to pay the bills. And actually, looking back right now, it was, kind of a good idea. I kind of looked from the side where I was, and then I just realized I missed it too much. I can't just stay and, wait. And I did a few submission fights, and I fought the best guys as far as submission. And I was working on my skills as far as striking and submission and the technique, and then I was doing a lot of teaching, which is good, too. I learned more from teaching other people. And more I start just missing all this action, and I'm like, that's about time to start over again.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got a record of 16-3. You've got some extremely notable wins over Pedro Hizo, Antonio Rogério Nogueira, Travis Youf, Yuki Kondo. Vladimir, is that your hopes to sort of reach that? You've been at the upper echelons of the sport. Is that where you'd like to be, say, in another year or so? Do you see yourself being at the top levels of the light heavyweight division in North America?
Yes, but I'm looking actually more farther than that right now. I wish I'd be younger, but I'm 36 right now, and I'll be there at least for another 4 or 5 years. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
The way the sport evolves, and as long as my efforts match my rewards, I can stay for a long time. and a good example of Randy Couture is fighting for, you know, he's pretty old, and other few guys, and hey, why not?
Well, and you may mention about how a few years ago there just wasn't the solid opportunities, the good offers financially for fighters. And do you see that changing, Vladimir, now several years later? It seems like there's bigger organizations jumping into the foray. There's more money involved in the fights. Does that give you kind of cause to look forward to the next couple of years as far as competing, that there might be some opportunities to make some decent money now?
Yes, that's one reason. Again, I'm all, when you get, when you're not 16 years old anymore, I'm 36, I have to pay my bills and I have son and I have to, you know, look at the future and secure it somehow and sport being involved. And I understand all the promoters, including UFC and the Dana White, and that they didn't have enough opportunity back then, you know, to pay fighters to, you know, losing money, and it was risky for them to do it. I understand all that. And then, and I appreciate all the efforts all the promoters did to get the sport where it is right now. And that's one of the reasons, because it gets more secure. Another reason, I've been training in this sport for so long time, and I don't want to just give up and say, hey, I'm done right now, because I think and I feel like I didn't accomplish enough to stop. I think I have, you know, something to prove still. And I don't want to go until I'm satisfied myself.
Well, long-time observers of the sport and long-time fans, Vladimir, are probably very familiar with you and your background. But there's so many new fans to the sport. A lot of people credit the Ultimate Fighter television show bringing new fans to the sport. But whatever the case may be, maybe just quickly tell us a little bit about your background. You've got your competitor on the national Belarus wrestling team, as you mentioned. And maybe tell us a little bit about how you came over to the States and ended up staying in the States and entering into mixed martial arts professional career over here.
Okay, it's kind of a long story, but I try to make it short. Yeah, I've been wrestled for, you know, Soviet Union back in the days, and then when all the collapse, I was pretty young back then, and then I think after Olympics in 92, which is I didn't go, because there was still only one team was competing for the old Soviet Union, which is, it was already separated. And after that, I was wrestling for Belarusian national team. But things were happening not, you know, towards the good at that time in that country. And I was just getting tired and like, no, I want to, you know, something better for myself and my family. And one time I came here in the United States, it was 94, I wrestled dual meets with national team and the American national team. And we just got with disagreements with coaches and teammates kind of agree on things like going for almost a strike, not to wrestle. And they choose me as a spokesman. And I talked to the coaches. And after the last moment, everybody kind of abandoned me. Just one, my friend, kind of support me, get his hand up, and everybody said, well, kind of back up. So we had no choice, and the coaches said, well, you guys done, you come home, your career is over, I'm like, I'm staying, I'm not going back. So I went to, that night, I was supposed to wrestle Royce Alger. He fought in MMA before, and he was a decent wrestler, and so I was supposed to wrestle him, so I went to his room, I'm like, dude, help me out here. And Dave Schultz, he was a good friend of mine too, he speaks a little bit Russian, and he said, well, just stay with your background, you can just go to any college and help them to coach you, and you can get a student visa and learn language and go from there. So that's what I did. We didn't go with the team. Me and my friend, we had like $100 in the pocket, just enough to buy a bus ticket from New York to California. And we went to a junior college by Reno, Nevada. It's in Susanville, Lassen College.
Yeah.
We met great people, great coach, Rex Branham, and they help us a lot when we get the student visa, and from day one we're helping them to coach the team, and we were national champions for 4 years when I was there. And one of my students, you know, I have a Jim Kelly, he was a silver medalist for last Olympics, and Rampage Jackson, he was one of my students then.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, have a good experience. And I, same time I was going to college, I graduated from Nevada, Reno. So I was kind of committing, go from Susanville and going to Irina Yvonne, they had wrestling team. And after 97, while I was doing that, I started MMA with Rico Ciparelli. He called me up, and back then he tried to make the Raw team. All the Real American Wrestling, all the best wrestlers were there. It was Randy Couture and Ben Henderson, myself, and Eric, Tom Erickson, and we were rocking the home back then. A good team. But then certain people went their own way, and then I moved down to LA because it was too hard for me to commute, you know, back and forth to Reno and LA. And we opened up a Raw gym. With a friend trade me and Rico and a few guys. And, you know, from there, the generators, I'm fighting the UFC with the PRTs with the...
Yeah. And so you still train, do you, most of your primary training out of the R1 training center, Vladimir?
Not right now. Not after I sign up with IFL. We kind of, Rico, again, it was not really disagreement. And he was really concentrating right now that we went to the professional submission league. So I think he didn't have enough time to do all, you know, any other things. And he kind of agreed with me to do that, but he said, then you know, I have no time for you if you go with those guys. And I'm like, well, fine. Because like I said earlier, I feel not satisfied so far with myself, what I accomplished in MMA, and I want to go on with it.
And so who have you been training with as far as with the Sabres? Whereabouts do you guys train, and who are some of the members of the camp?
Well, I've been training with Tony McKee gym as far as sparring and the technical part of it, like in the body shop there, and all the teammates there, and we have another 20 guys, and Red Pitt Jackson, so I spar with him 3 times a week. And my condition and the strength and condition I train and the velocity here at the Manhattan Beach with the Ken Vick. I've been training with him for the past 5 years, seen it off, and that's about it.
Well, last question for you, Vladimir, before we let you out of here. You mentioned you've been training with Rampage a bit. What were your thoughts on his UFC debut?
Well, I expect him to win first of all, and the fight. That's all I expected. He can do better, but he admitted too that he was a little bit nervous and he just didn't want to lose. And I think that's what, for me, the same. It's like fighting UFC, first of all, were you fighting first time? Well, for him, it was first time, so you don't want to really screw up, so he didn't show all the Rampage he can show, as I believe. Or if they put you on you're fighting for championships, same. Some guys, they just didn't want to lose, so they kind of stay conservative. And one of my was mistakes, or not mistakes, but I don't know. Some people call you, oh, it's boring fighter, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, I don't want to lose. I want to take a risk, but I don't want to be, you know, go there and get knocked out. And
right.
That's why I get knocked out with Andrea Loft, because I'm trying to, you know, get accomplished too much in short time. I just want to jump on them, and, you know, and that's what happens. I believe that the Rampage can do better, and it will do better. He'll relax, and you know, so I'm looking forward to training together, and he'll kick some ass.
Well, Vladimir, we appreciate you coming on the program. I'm sure a lot of people out there that remember you from the UFC days are looking forward to seeing you in the IFL, and all the new fans of sport as well. I have a lot to look forward to in the IFL, watching you compete for the Sabres. Vladimir, best of luck in 2007.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And we'll see. I'll try to do better with my actions and with my words.